Finn's first official visit as king was to the apartment of his close friend, the Paragon, Stuart Lennox. Finn had sent an official summons, calling on Stuart to attend his new king, but Stuart wouldn't open his door to the messenger, and his comline was closed down. So, Finn went to see Stuart. Anyone else would have had their door kicked in and been dragged before the king in chains for such a slight, but Finn went in person, for old time's sake. Stuart had a nice apartment in a nice part of town. Finn arrived incognito with just a handful of guards.
Oh, Stuart, please do answer the door.
There was a long pause. Finn waited patiently. Stuart looked out. Finn had to admit he was surprised at the changes in Stuart since he'd last seen him. The young Paragon's face was gaunt and haggard, his eyes were red and puffy, and he hadn't shaved in days. He was wearing old, unwashed clothes that looked and smelled as though they'd been slept in, several times. But Stuart's gaze was steady, and his mouth was firm, as he looked coldly out at his old friend Finn.
"Well, Stuart, aren't you going to invite me in? I've come a long way just to see you. Have you no welcome for your new king?"
Stuart let go of the door and shuffled back into his apartment. Finn pushed the door open, stepped inside, and then carefully closed the door behind him. He looked unhurriedly about him, not letting his opinion show in his face. The room was a mess. Everything was just scattered around, as though Stuart had taken to dropping things where he felt like and couldn't be bothered to pick them up. There was a close, fusty atmosphere, and the shades were drawn over the windows. Finn peered into the gloom, letting his eyes adjust. Stuart was sitting slumped in an oversized armchair, not looking at Finn. It was very quiet in the dark room. Finn pulled up a chair and sat down facing Stuart.
Tell me who your cleaning service is and I'll have them shot. That's a joke, Stuart. You know, you're looking...
I know what I look like. I haven't been sleeping. Haven't been eating either. Can't keep anything down. Not after...
Stu...
You let them do that to me. They killed a man in front of me. And then made me... And you didn't even punish them!
Well, they could still be useful to me. Once the fuss over Viramond has died down, and it will, I know I can count on their loyalty. What about your loyalty, Stu?
Stuart smiled slowly. It wasn't a pleasant sight, and neither was the look that came into his dark, sunken eyes.
That's why you're here, isn't it, Finn? Not because you're concerned about me. I only matter when it affects you. Bastard.
You were such a pretty boy once, Stuart. And now look what you've done to yourself. Why didn't you come to my coronation? It was my big day, and I wanted you there. I did send you an invitation.
Oh, come on now, Finn. Someone like me doesn't belong in your new austere life. Your new kingly image. I know too much about the real you. I've had a lot of time to think, sitting here in the dark, waiting for you to come and see me. I don't like the man you've made me into. I gave up honor and responsibility and self-respect. All for your love. Only to discover you don't know the meaning of the word. Look at what's become of me, Finn. All for you.
I never asked you to do this to yourself. If I'd known you were prone to hysteria and overreaction...
Get out of here, Finn. I still have some pride left. I won't be your puppy dog anymore.
You'll be whatever I want you to be.
Finn stopped, because Stuart was laughing soundlessly at him.
Oh, what, Finn? You'll make me eat human flesh again? You'll kill me and put me out of my misery? There's nothing left you can threaten me with.
Oh, I'm sure I could find something, Stuart, if I put my mind to it. I have a job for you, Stuart Lennox, and I am your king. You took an oath when you became a Paragon, to be faithful unto death to the throne of Logris. Are you an oath-breaker now?
Stuart sat very still in his chair, his face unreadable.
What do you want of me, Your Majesty?
The other Paragons are trapped in the Sangreal Bar. It seems they can't take a step outside without being stoned or even openly attacked. And I can't let them defend themselves, because then we'll have even more bodies on our hands. I need them to stay put and keep their heads down until I can take steps to repair their reputations. But just like you, it seems they're too preoccupied with their own problems to answer the comm. So I want you to take my message to them. They know you speak for me.
You bastard! I can't believe you'd ask that of me!
Someone has to do it. And I'm not asking you, Stuart. I am your king, and I'm giving you an order.
Take your order and shove it, your majesty! Now get the hell out of my home! I can't stand to look at you anymore.
Finn rose unhurriedly to his feet.
Stu, and we were so close once. I really am sorry about what happened, but I have to see the bigger picture.
There is no bigger picture, Finn. There's only people, and how you treat them. Just go. And if you ever really felt anything for me, don't come back.
Finn stood outside the closed door for a while, remembering and considering. And then he nodded to the small group of armed guards he'd left waiting outside Stuart's apartment, and they smashed the door open and rushed into the apartment. It was a pity, but if Stuart couldn't be trusted to carry out orders anymore, then he couldn't be trusted at all. He'd made himself into a liability. It didn't take the guards long to overpower Stuart and drag him out into the corridor. He was kicking and struggling, but he didn't have much strength left after his extended fast. He saw Finn watching.
Damn you! I'll kill you, you son of a...
The guards shut him up with brutal efficiency. Finn waited until he was sure Stuart was listening and paying attention, and then he addressed the officer in charge.
Take him to the nearest lockup and hold him there until I send word. No one's to know he's there. And remember to search him very thoroughly for concealed weapons. He was a paragon once, after all.
The boy won't stand for this.
The honorable member for Viramond is no longer gracing us with his company. He left Logris yesterday under an assumed identity. It seems he was rather upset over what happened to the late Clan Deathstalker. Who would have thought it? Either way, he's gone home and gone to ground on Viramond. The Planetary Council there was uncommonly rude to me the last I spoke to them. Actually threatened to go rogue like Mistworld. But of course it won't come to that. Either they agree to roll over and play dead like a good little puppy dog, or I'll have the transmutation engines turn their whole world and everything on it into something more useful.
Stuart tried to lunge at Finn, but the guards held him firmly.
The people, bless their black vindictive little hearts, need to see a paragon brought to trial. So I think we'll give them you.
Finn looked again at the officer in charge.
Better see that he's kept well drugged. We don't want him hurting himself before he comes to trial. And by the time you do come to trial, Stuart, the drugs will have wiped your mind of anything unpleasant you might have said against me. Trust me, you'll feel so much better. Goodbye, Stuart. I'll probably be too busy to attend your trial, but I promise I'll do my best to be there for your execution.
Finn nodded to the guards, and they dragged Stuart Lennox away. Finn was already thinking about something else. The Paragon Emma Steele decided she couldn't afford to wait any longer to put the boot into Finn Bloody Durandal. He was king now, which meant there was no one but her left to oppose him. She could already see the signs of a major clampdown against all dissenting voices moving into place. There was nothing and no one left to stop Finn from moving against anyone he saw as an enemy, or even a potential enemy. He had to be shut down now, before he could consolidate his power. Emma said as much to Nina Malapert, while striding up and down the young reporter's living room like a caged animal.
We can't just go public, even with all the evidence we've amassed. The king's never been more popular, mostly because the people don't know the real him, and the reputation of the other paragons has affected the way people look at me. Like I'm guilty until proven innocent. We need someone the public still trusts to back us up. Someone people will believe when they vouch for the authenticity of our evidence. If we can just get enough people listening and talking, Finn's own supporters will turn against him to save their own necks.
But there's no one left.
Nina sat curled up in a big chair with her knees hugged to her chest. Her eyes were very large.
The public doesn't trust anyone, Lovie. Not after what happened with Lewis and Jessamine. And now Douglas? Wasn't that awful? Do you really think he murdered his own brother?
Not without a good reason. Look, there might be one person left we can trust. I think I've come up with someone who might still be interested in the truth and be in a position to do something about it. But just in case I'm wrong, I've written it all out for you. On paper, so no one can find it in your files. Read it after I'm gone. And if I don't come back, you'll have to decide what to do next.
Nina uncurled in a moment and launched herself up out of her chair, glaring at Emma.
Oh, no you don't, Emma Steele. Where you go, I go. We're partners. You just wait here a minute and I'll go get my most inconspicuous camera and my biggest gun and we'll...
No, we won't.
Nina stopped in her tracks. Emma had used her Paragon's voice, and Nina recognized its resolution, if not its authority. Nina pouted fiercely and flung herself back into her chair. Emma had to smile at her.
Look, if I'm right, I'll call you in, and you'll have an exclusive that will beat anything else you've done so far. The beginning of the end for the king. But if I'm wrong, someone has to be here to carry on.
I don't want you to go. With you, I could be strong and fearless because you were. If you're not here, I'm afraid. I might go back to who I used to be.
Butterflies don't turn back into caterpillars. I've enjoyed our partnership, Nina. If it does all go wrong, don't let me down by doing anything stupid. Bringing down Finn is what matters. Revenge can wait.
Don't talk like that. Of course you're coming back. You're a Paragon. You're Emma Steele.
Lewis was a Deathstalker and Douglas was king. And where are they now? Don't underestimate Finn. But I promise I'll be very careful and not turn my back on anyone. I'll see you later, Nina.
Emma smiled at her and left. No one paid much attention to Emma Steele as she strode through the House of Parliament. They were used to seeing the Logris Paragon going back and forth on various business of her own. Some even smiled and bowed to her as she passed, perhaps the last respected Paragon in the Empire. Emma made her way confidently through the warren of corridors and offices at the back of the house. She knew where she was going, even though she'd never had cause to go there before. Everyone in the house knew where this particular office was. Emma stopped before the right door.
We need to talk. You're the last one left who isn't affiliated with any group or belief. There are things I need to tell you about Finn Durandal. Things no one else knows.
Then you'd better come in.
Emma strode into Anne's office and nodded her approval at the bank of monitor screens covering everything that happened in the house. Emma believed in good security. Anne shut and locked the door so they wouldn't be interrupted and gestured for Emma to sit down. The Paragon did so. Emma ran through everything she knew and detailed the major evidence she had. She didn't mention Nina by name, speaking only of an investigative reporter who'd assisted her. Anne nodded here and there, paying careful attention. When Emma finally finished, Anne sat back in her chair and thought for a long moment.
I'm glad you came to me with this, Emma. I can't think of anyone else here who wouldn't have turned you in immediately. Finn's people are everywhere these days, even in places you wouldn't suspect. I was one of them once. But he's changed. Now he's king, he thinks he's untouchable. Well, we'll see about that. I think I know what we need to do next, but it's going to take some thought. Why don't I make us a nice cup of tea?
Anne got up and got the tea things together.
And there's some chocolate biscuits in the barrel, if you like.
Emma took the lid off the biscuit barrel and rooted inside for something with a really thick chocolate coating. And behind her, Anne picked up the heavy crystal paperweight from her desk.
Ha!
Blood flew on the air. Emma tried to crawl towards the door, and Anne moved with her.
Why won't you die?
Finally, Anne realized that Emma Steele had stopped moving. There was blood all over Anne's hand and her arm now, and some had sprayed across her distorted face. She knelt down, still clutching the gore-soaked paperweight in her hand, and checked the pulse in the Paragon's neck. There was nothing there. Emma wasn't breathing, and her eyes were fixed. Anne straightened up and let the dripping paperweight fall from her hand. Anne looked at the blood on her hand for a while, and then at the dead body before her. Blood was soaking into her carpet, ruining it. Finn. She had to call Finn. He would know what to do. She went over to the comm unit, giving the body plenty of room, and called Finn on their special security line.
Finn, I need you here.
Really, Anne? I'm rather busy right now.
Trust me, Your Majesty. This isn't something that can wait.
Dazed as she was, Anne still knew better than to speak openly on a comm channel.
Fine, I'll be right over. Don't talk to anybody.
Anne sat in her chair and waited, trying not to look at the body. She tried to wipe the blood off her hand and arm. She felt giddy and sick. It seemed to take forever until Finn finally came.
Anne, open the door. It's Finn.
Finn was very surprised to see the dead body. He made Anne tell him everything that had happened. Anne explained what she'd done and why, in a mostly calm voice, and Finn was very reassuring. When she finally finished, he put his arm around her shoulders.
Now you're not to worry, Anne. You did the right thing. And you did very well, taking out a Paragon all on your own. And Emma Steele, too. I'm impressed, Anne. Really. I didn't know you had it in you. I shall see you in a whole new light from now on. But you're not to worry about a thing. I'll have my people come in and clean up this mess. No one needs to know Emma Steele was ever here. Now, she told you she had evidence against me. If she didn't bring it with her, she must have left it with someone as insurance.
She mentioned a reporter she'd been working with, but she wouldn't reveal the name. I did try.
Oh, I'm sure you did. We'll track down whoever it is. Someone always knows. You're not to be upset, Anne. You did well. You saw a threat to us, and you stamped it out.
Finn took both of Anne's hands in his.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make you my queen. I can't think of anyone more suited to reign at my side. King Finn and Queen Anne. What a team we'll be.
The streets were crowded all through the Parade of the Endless for James's funeral procession. Sobbing crowds lined street after street as his coffin progressed slowly through the city, borne on a gun carriage with mounted ceremonial guards going before and after. Wreaths adorned the coffin, and the people threw flowers into the road before it. The man who should have been king, betrayed and slain by his own jealous brother. The media was bursting with it on every channel. Cameras broadcast the slow, solemn procession live to every world in the Empire. To have lost him once was bad enough all those years ago. To lose him twice was unbearable. To many, James's unexpected and miraculous return had been a sign that things were changing for the better, an omen of better times to come, that there was still hope in the face of the terror. And now that hope had been snatched away from them by a man they'd once admired and adored. It was almost too much to bear. One person alone in the streets of the city didn't give a damn for poor dead James. Nina Malapert, anonymous in the ubiquitous morning black, her pink mohawk subdued under a heavy black cowl, shouldered her way through the packed crowds, not even glancing at the street. She was on her way to the public mortuary, where Emma Steele's body was being held. No public procession for the paragon Emma Steele, even though she deserved it more. No, Emma was condemned as a traitor now, her body destined for the city incinerator, her ashes for the city dump. Not even a stone with a number on it to mark her resting place. Nina was damned if she'd let that happen. She had to bribe her way into the mortuary, but it cost less than she expected. Perhaps the big gun she let the man glimpse on her hip had something to do with that. The attendant led her into the cold room.
"You've got 10 minutes. That's it."
And then went back to watching James's funeral procession on the viewscreen in his pokey little office. Emma was lying on a metal slab, identified only by a number. She was wearing a regulation white shift and a cloth to cover the damage done to her head. Nina trailed her fingertips across Emma's cold brown cheek. She'd meant to say so many things to Emma, promises of revenge and retribution and more. But now, it all seemed so small in the face of death. Emma seemed smaller, diminished, like an exquisite doll that had been carelessly handled and crushed. Something infinitely precious, forever ruined. She should have been left in her paragon's armor at least. She'd earned the right to lie in full honors. But by attacking Anne Barclay, she'd been condemned as just another traitor. Just another paragon gone bad. Nina couldn't believe it when the news came into the media office where she was trying to get some work done while waiting for Emma to come back. Anne Barclay? There really wasn't anyone you could trust, after all.
"They struck you down from behind. It was the only way they could have brought you down. They always were afraid to face you. But they'll pay for this, Emma. All of them. With your help."
Nina's hand went to her sleeve and the hidden paragon skeleton key that Emma had left behind, along with her handwritten notes.
"I have a plan, Emma. A simple plan, perhaps. But then I never was a very complicated person. I'm going to tear down Finn's rotten regime and dance on its ashes. All for you, my darling Emma. All for you."
Stuart Lennox was chained to the wall of his holding cell with heavy steel chains. He was waiting to be moved to maximum security, but no one was in any rush. He was supposed to be doped to keep him quiet, but the prison doctor had said he was too frail yet. It didn't matter. They all knew a broken man when they saw one. They'd left him a protein cube and a cup of water, but he hadn't touched them. He was too busy thinking. Even after all that had happened, up until today, he'd still clung to his belief in Finn. Belief that deep down, the man cared for him, loved him in his way. It was hard to realize he'd been such a fool. The day's events had been like a shock of cold water in the face, waking him from a self-indulgent dream. Well, he was awake now, and his mind was sharp and focused again. Sooner or later, they would come for him, and seeing only a frail, broken man, they would be relaxed and careless. They would make a mistake, give him an opening, and then Stuart Lennox would show them all that he was still a paragon. He picked up the protein cube, took a firm bite, and chewed hungrily.
"What are you doing here?"
Stuart looked around curiously. Stuart was on his feet in a moment. Something was happening. He could feel it. He took hold of his chains in both hands, ready to use them as a weapon if necessary. The lock on the heavy steel door snapped open, and Stuart braced himself, ready for one last chance at escape or revenge. Or at least a chance to die bravely. A young woman in black, with a tall pink mohawk, a really big gun in one hand, and a paragon skeleton key in the other, grinned at him cheerfully.
Hi there. I'm Nina Malapert, Demon Girl reporter. Emma Steele was my partner and my friend, and Finn's people killed her. So I thought maybe you and I could get together and do something about it. What do you think, sweetie?
Sounds like a plan to me. Unlock these chains and just put me at the bastards.
Nina flashed him another brilliant smile and used her skeleton key on his chains. She had to support some of his weight as they left the cell. Stuart hadn't realized just how weak he'd become. Outside, the reception area was trashed, and there was a dead guard behind the main desk and another lying on the floor. Nina hurried him past them.
Sorry about the mess, but they weren't as open to reason and bribes as I'd hoped. Gosh, there isn't much of you, is there, lovey? I'll have to feed you up when I get you out of here.
Where are we going?
Stuart reached down to snatch up a guard's gun.
The rookery. Emma kept a place there. For emergencies.
Doesn't everyone?
And they both smiled as they left the lockup and disappeared into the indifferent city, plotting their revenges.
For the second time in recent history, the entire empire mourns the loss of the man who should have been king. Another sad note on this day of sorrow is the complete absence of members of...
Anne Barclay watched James's funeral procession on her office monitors. She had considered going in person, but she was never comfortable in crowds. People made her nervous. She'd always preferred to view the world at a distance, through her monitors. It gave her a necessary illusion of control over the proceedings, and keeping the world at arm's length made it much harder for the world to hurt her. Get close to the world, get close to people like poor dear Jamie. Tears welled up in her eyes, even though they were already puffy and sore from crying. James had been the only one who ever really cared for her, and now he was gone, and she was alone again. There was a new carpet on her office floor. They couldn't get the bloodstains out of the old one. Anne didn't think about Emma Steele, didn't think about her at all. She slept perfectly well, after a few sleeping tablets. Anne carefully checked who it was on the corridor monitor before unlocking the door and letting Finn in. He saw what she was watching on the monitors and sank easily into the chair next to hers.
Well, if nothing else, he got to go out in style. Not bad for a few cell scrapings with delusions of grandeur. Look at the peasants lapping it all up. They do love a good show and a good cry. They're always much fonder of their heroes when they're dead. Still, James served his purpose. He brought Douglas down.
What are we going to do about Douglas?
I don't think we'll take him to trial just yet. Let him stew for a while in Traitor's Hall, while we encourage public indignation to simmer and grow ugly. Then a very public trial followed almost immediately by a very public execution. Something slow and messy, I think. A good show will help to take the people's minds off other things. Perhaps I'll duel Douglas to the death in the arena. Yes, I like that. Finally, a chance to prove that I'm the better man and always was.
Why do you hate Douglas so much? He was your friend, once. You were always together, you and Douglas and Lewis. You seemed happy enough. Now it's like there's no room in you for anything but hate. Why, Finn? You're not like me. You've always had everything you've ever wanted.
No, I never had what I really wanted. I was never their friend, not really. We were just colleagues, with things in common that no one else could understand. So we hung out together. But it always felt like I was just going through the motions. Most of my life felt like that back then. And anyway, friendship wasn't what I wanted. All my life I desperately wanted love to be real, and it never was for me. No matter who I was with, I think perhaps I'm not capable of it. I tried sex as a substitute, but even that didn't feel real for me. Passion has always been a stranger to me. All my life I've wanted to know what every other man knows, to feel just once what everyone else feels. And I never have. There's only ever been me. So, if I can't have love, all that's left is hate. And to be a monster.
Anne looked at him.
We've been close, done things together. We could...
No, because it would mean something to you, and it wouldn't to me.
Are you happy now, as a traitor and a villain?
Finn considered the matter carefully, and then smiled.
Yes, I've never been happier. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm on my way to see Douglas. Why don't you come with me? It'll take your mind off James. Trust me, there's nothing like gloating over a defeated foe to brighten up the darkest day.
Sure. Why not?
Douglas Campbell, once a paragon, once a king, now sat alone in a bare stone cell in Traitor's Hall, weighed down with so many chains he could hardly move. Douglas had fully expected to be drugged like his father, to keep him quiet, but it seemed Finn wanted Douglas to be able to savor the depths to which he had fallen. Douglas had done a lot of thinking, in the peace and quiet of his cell, but very little of it had been about his present circumstances. Douglas was making plans for the future. Plans for blood and slaughter, and Finn's head on a stake. Douglas turned his head, about the only part of him he could move, and there were Finn and Anne in the doorway, looking in at him.
Hello, Douglas. No, please, don't get up. It's only me, and Anne, of course. You know, you really do look a mess, Douglas. Those clothes must smell pretty ripe by now, what with all the bloodstains from you and James and your father. We'll have to get you some nice new clothes when it's time for your trial.
Why bother with a trial? You know you'll have to kill me to stop me.
Oh, there has to be a trial. The forms must be observed. Everyone's looking forward to it. The people need to see justice being done. So you'll have your day in court, and then you'll be executed. No point in hanging about, is there?
I'm going to kill you, Finn. I will beat you to death with my bare hands. For my father's death, for the desecration of my brother's grave, and for what you've done to the Empire.
I never liked William. He never liked me, I could tell. And digging up an old body is the least of the many sins I've committed. Would it interest you to know how and why I brought about your destruction and the corruption of your empire? It's really very instructive. What surprised me was how easy it was. There were people lining up to piss all over your precious golden age. All they needed was a focus. And I've always found it easy to be everything to everyone. But it all started with you, Douglas. In a way, you could say that everything that's happened is really all your fault. You should have made me champion at your coronation. I deserved it. I earned it. If I'd been champion, I would have served you faithfully all my days, protected you from every harm until my dying breath. I would have made you a legend. But no, you had to choose that weakling Lewis because of his bloody name, and because you always liked him better than me. Well, guess what, Douglas? You wouldn't give me what was mine by right, so I've taken everything you had and made it mine. Who's the better man now, eh, Douglas?
Douglas looked at Anne.
What happened to you, Anne? I could understand Finn going to the bad, but you? Your betrayal makes no sense at all to me.
You never knew me. You never really cared about me, any of you. I was just boring, reliable old Anne, there to be used. I've made you all pay for that.
Finn smiled and slipped his arm through hers.
We were made for each other.
He paused then, frowning in concentration as a message came through over his comm implant.
I'm afraid you'll have to excuse me, Douglas. I would have preferred to spend more time rubbing your nose in how stupid you've been, but duty calls. You know how it is.
I do. I'm surprised that you do.
Finn bowed once, mockingly, and reached for the cell door.
Sleep tight, Douglas. Don't let the bedbugs bite. Too much.
Tell me one thing. Tell me this, Finn. Were we ever really friends? Are all my memories a lie?
I don't know. It all seems such a long time ago now. Does it really matter?
No.
Finn dropped Anne off at the house, ignoring her demands for explanations, and then made his way very quickly to the main starport. He trusted Anne with most things, but this was different. A starship had just come in from the planet Hayden, apparently carrying every human scientist who'd been sent there to study the Madness Maze. It seemed Shub had used its robots to throw them all off-planet. This had come as news to Finn. There hadn't been any advance warning, not even a hint of trouble between Shub and the human scientists. And now the Hunter had landed, and the portmaster was going crazy. He'd quarantined the ship on the landing pad and wouldn't let anyone else near it. Finn kept pressing the portmaster for details, but the man refused to even discuss the matter over an open channel.
Oh no. You have to see this for yourself.
Finn found the ship, easily enough. The Hunter was standing alone on a pad, as far away from the other ships as possible. Armed guards were spread around the perimeter of the landing pad. Finn accepted their officer's salute and looked the ship over. From a distance, it seemed normal enough. Standard passenger job, built for comfort rather than speed. No obvious signs of damage.
Report. What's all the fuss about? What have you been told?
Not much, Your Majesty. We can't contact the ship's captain or any of the crew. The ship's AI seems to be in a state of shock. The control tower had to bring the ship down by remote control or it would have slammed right into the pads. Whatever's happened on board the Hunter, no one's talking. And since it came from Hayden...
Understood. Hold your people where they are. I'm going inside now to take a look. Oh, don't look so shocked, man. I was a paragon and a champion long before I was king.
At least take some of my men with you, Your Majesty.
No one gets anywhere near this ship until I've cleared it. And no one talks about anything they see or hear, or I'll have their heads. I'm going in. You make sure I'm not interrupted.
Finn strode calmly toward the starship. The air seemed very cold, and there wasn't a breath of wind on the pads. The great steel hull of the Hunter loomed over him as he stopped before the main airlock. Finn pursed his lips and considered the matter. If for whatever reason Shub had returned to their old ways, he wouldn't put it past the AIs to have left some clever and very nasty booby trap inside the airlock to take the unwary by surprise. Finn used his skeleton key to open the airlock, and then stood carefully to one side as the door cycled slowly open. The smell hit him first. All kinds of filth mixed together and polluting the thick air seeping out of the lock. Shit, piss, vomit, blood. Something really bad had happened inside the Hunter on her trip back from Hayden. Finn drew his gun and waited patiently. But nothing happened. He stepped sharply around the open door and stared into the airlock, gun at the ready. It was empty. Finn stepped inside and opened the inner door. Again, there were no surprises, but the smell was immediately much worse. Finn moved cautiously into the main corridor of the ship. The lighting had been dialed down to an eerie yellow glow. There were finger paintings on the steel walls, childish and obscene, and all the more disturbing because they'd been drawn in blood. Someone had written, "Help me, help me, help me," all down the length of one wall. It had taken a lot of blood. Finn peered about him into the gloom. There was no sign of anyone. He listened carefully. He thought he could hear something, but it was a long way off. He headed for the bridge. The main command door was open. It should have been sealed in flight for security reasons, but instead it was standing just a little ajar. Finn pushed it open with one hand, gun at the ready. The bridge turned out to be deserted, apart from a severed head placed on the pilot seat. The eyes had been gouged out, but someone had drawn another eye on the forehead in blood.
Ship's AI, respond.
But it wouldn't respond. Finn left the bridge and headed for the stern and the passenger section. He checked each door and compartment carefully as he went. He found more disturbing signs, but no trace of any of the scientists. until halfway down the main corridor, he found his path blocked by a clumsy barricade of furniture, jammed together so tightly Finn couldn't budge any of it.
Oh, damn it.
Steel chair legs stuck out like spikes. A defense against what? There was a gap in the middle of the barricade. Finn leaned forward very cautiously and peered through the gap. On the other side of the improvised barricade, all the human scientists from Hayden, some 40-odd men and women, were packed together in the narrow corridor. Some were dead. Some had clearly been attacked. Some had been, at least partly, eaten. There was blood all over the floor, and other things too. On the bulkhead walls, the scientists had scrawled horrid signs and images. The surviving scientists were in one big pile, crawling slowly over each other, like insects in a nest. Their faces and their eyes were quite mad.
Fascinating, isn't it?
Finn spun around, grabbed Dr. Happy by the front of his stained lab coat, and slammed him back against the nearest bulkhead wall. Finn pressed the barrel of his gun against the doctor's head.
What have you done? I experimented on them. It was a long trip back from Hayden, and there was nothing else to do. I hadn't been able to achieve anything useful with the 12 maze survivors, and it seemed such a waste to come back without learning something. The maze was fascinating. I'd go and look at it for hours on end. It sang to me, and I started to think such amazing thoughts. So I doctored the hunter's water supply, gave everyone a dose of my latest creation, opened up their mind's eye to a much larger universe. It's not my fault if they couldn't cope with what they found there. But don't worry, Finn. I've been keeping very careful notes.
Finn let go of the doctor's coat. There was no point in getting mad at Dr. Happy. He honestly wouldn't understand. Besides, it would be a waste to kill him while he could still be useful.
Next time, ask me first. I had a lot of questions for those scientists about what happened on Hayden, and now I'll probably never know. Come on, let's get out of here.
As you wish. Though I shall be sorry to leave such intriguing subjects. I trust you'll keep me up to date on all future developments.
Dr. Happy, if you don't shut up right now, I'm going to sew your lips together. Leave the ship, now!
Dr. Happy led the way out. Once they were both out on the landing pad, the air seemed so much clearer. Finn beckoned to the guard officer, who hurried over.
Take your men inside and shoot anything that isn't already dead. Then collect and burn all the bodies, just in case. And you'd better wear full biocontamination suits at all times. I'd burn the ship too, but we're short of vessels at the moment.
Ooh, can I at least have the ashes? I mean...
Finn looked at Dr. Happy.
Never mind.
The officer looked at Finn uncertainly.
So, what do I put this down as, Your Majesty? A terrorist incident?
If you like, pick someone who's annoyed you recently and put the blame on them. Use your initiative. And this person and I were never here. Understood?
The officer bowed and hurried away. Because he felt like it, Finn slapped Dr. Happy on the back of the head.
Ow!
And then escorted him off the landing pad.
Tell me what happened on Hayden, Dr. Happy, and I require details now that you're the only surviving witness. Why did Shub send you all away? Has there been some new breakthrough at the Madness Maze?
Not that I know of. And there was no warning at all. Oh, my word, no.
Dr. Happy's bony fingers fluttered uneasily over his sunken chest.
Just suddenly there were Shub robots everywhere. Far more than I had previously seen in the workings around the maze. They overpowered and disarmed the security people with such speed and dexterity that there were only a few, mostly minor, injuries. And then they herded us all into one place and marched us off to board the Hunter. The ship was powered up and waiting to go, and they'd already programmed the ship's AI to take us straight to Logris and not accept any other orders. We were helpless.
Weren't you given any reason?
No, They just said we couldn't stay any longer. They were really quite polite, all things considered. Some people tried to fight the robots, but they had tangle fields and sleep gas, so...
Had the human scientists discovered anything new recently? What about your experiments?
My access to the 12 survivors was strictly limited by Shub, who I can't help feeling were unnecessarily cautious in their attitude. But I feel I can now say with some confidence that whatever changes the madness maze induces in people, it's not chemical or biochemical in nature. None of my little concoctions had any effect on them. And some of the doses I gave them were so powerful, they would have made a mountain jump up and dance.
You are now returning to the Rookery, Dr. Happy, where you will speak to no one of this. There will be more work for you later. And tell me, what do you know about something called the Boost?
Back at his apartment, Finn Durandal contacted the Shub embassy on Logris. He was put through immediately with no delays, almost as though they'd been waiting for his call. A featureless blue steel face stared out of the screen at Finn, its eyes glowing serenely.
I take it the human scientists have all returned home safely.
Well, they're all here. Would you care to explain just why you kicked them off Hayden?
It was necessary. The evacuation of the scientists became imperative, as our experiments were moving into a new and very dangerous phase. It was no longer safe for the humans to remain. So we sent them away, temporarily. They can return later, once our experiments are safely concluded. The welfare of the human scientists had to be our first consideration.
May I inquire as to the nature of these new experiments?
We are investigating the basic nature of the maze. We hope to have some very interesting results to share with you soon.
I see. You will, of course, keep me posted, and let me know when human scientists can safely return to Hayden.
Of course.
Lying bastards. This is all to do with Lewis and his people. They must be nearly at Hayden by now. Well, Shub, you aren't the only one who can spring surprises.
Over the next few weeks, King Finn busied himself consolidating his hold on power. Suddenly, his people were everywhere, and spies and fanatics and enforcers swarmed over every world in the Empire, hunting out the disloyal and the potentially dangerous.
Don't move.
Please! I haven't done anything!
People were dragged out of their houses and disappeared on the strength of a rumor, and many were never seen again. No one was safe. Anyone who dared speak out against the new crackdown was denounced as an Esper or alien sympathizer, perhaps even an elf thrall. There were no official charges or trials, just bodies hanging from lampposts in every city. There was food rationing and travel restrictions. Church militant and pure humanity membership was made compulsory for everyone. Harsh new rules over public gatherings and behavior were brought in and strictly enforced. No dissenting voices were heard on any of the media.
Imperial security, the following necessary measures have been...
The usual faces read out prepared statements and did it with a smile, or were replaced with people who would. Some brave souls gathered together anyway in secret locations, but none of them survived for long. Elf thralls were everywhere, searching out Finn's enemies, sometimes even possessing members of the rebel groups. All too soon, there was a night of the long knives, as Finn's assassins wiped out every group that dared oppose him. On every world, the bodies were piled up in public squares and burnt, blazing like great bale fires in the night. The only safe place left in the Empire was, surprisingly enough, the Rookery on Logris. Finn left them alone. He knew better than to trust them, but he still might have need of their various specialized talents. Refugees from 100 worlds somehow made their way to Logris and the Rookery and found safety there, for a price. Finn arranged a meeting with the leaders of the Hellfire Club, ostensibly to discuss the new situation. The club was not at all happy with recent events. At first, they had approved of the chaos, but as the clampdown progressed, it made it almost impossible for the club to operate. Without the usual restrictions of the law, pure humanity and church militant fanatics were wiping out Hellfire Club branches everywhere. The club leaders turned up for the meeting at the right place at the right time, by various secret routes, all of them heavily armed and armored, ready to argue their corner from a position of strength. To be sure of getting all of them, Finn had his people blow up the whole city block. A few of the braver news media people went underground, broadcasting messages of defiance from private stations.
These are lies. The trail of conspiracy leads straight to the so-called king himself. No. No, please, no!
When caught, they were shot in the back of the head while trying to escape. All of the main media stations were brought under state control in the name of the emergency, and Finn put his own people in charge. There was a warrant out for Nina Malapert's arrest, mostly for being a friend of Emma Steele, but Nina had gone to ground and was not to be found. The security guards trashed her place anyway and used her stuffed toys for target practice. The few members of Parliament who dared to speak out were targeted early on. Most were made into elf thralls so that they could publicly renounce their previous statements before being executed for treason. Only one MP had the foresight to surround herself and her people with heavy-duty S-blockers. Meera Puri of Malediction retreated to a secret bunker along with a small army of friends and supporters and set about constructing an underground resistance movement. But most of the people she thought she could count on were already dead or disappeared. Finn had planned his coup with great thoroughness. It didn't take Finn's people all that long to track down Meera Puri. Just the presence of so many S-blockers in one place was a giveaway. An army of security guards stormed the building, using shaped charges to blast their way past locked doors and barricades.
Madame Puri! Hurry! You must leave now!
Meera's people tried to get her away, while they held back the guards. Her name could still be used as a rallying cry for the resistance. Meera Puri was ready to go, but she made the mistake of looking back as the security guards swept in. She saw her people mown down and couldn't leave them.
No!
She drew her gun and shot the guard leader in the head. And then she drew her sword and cut her way into the heart of those who'd come to tear her down. She killed four more guards before a dozen swords slammed into her at once. Afterwards, they shot her repeatedly, just to make sure. And then the guards took turns, kicking the dead body around like a rag doll. Finn's actions were presented as a crusade. Only the guilty had anything to fear, was the party line. And all across the empire, most of the people were glad to see the enemies of humanity dying. It made them feel better to know that the empire was capable of striking back at something, even if it wasn't the terror. When most of the killing was over, or at least slowing down, King Finn appeared on every channel to make a firm and soothing speech to the people.
Painful necessary measures will soon pass, and we shall all be the stronger for them. Soon, soon we shall have all the secrets of the madness maze at our disposal, and then everyone will be able to pass through safely. Humanity will become superhuman. And working together, the armies of man will utterly destroy the terror.
It was all bullshit, of course, but it was what the people desperately wanted to hear. King Finn stamped out long-cherished freedoms, adding dozens of new laws designed for brutal social control, all in the name of the emergency. And the people were so scared of enemies within and the coming terror that they loved Finn for it and praised his boldness and strength as their great protector. He'd never been more popular, more beloved. Finn laughed until he hurt himself. If he'd known it would be this easy, he would have done it long ago. Only the elves remained untouched, partly because Finn still needed their services, but mostly because he still had enough good sense to be extremely cautious where the Uber-Espers were concerned. The elf rank and file watched Finn dispose of all his old allies and muttered darkly among themselves. The Uber-Espers voiced their own concerns, but only with each other. Perhaps the time had come to break with Finn and strike out on their own behalf. take advantage of all the chaos and confusion. But secretly, all the Uber-Espers hesitated to commit themselves, for fear one of the other Uber-Espers would seize the chance to stab them in the back. Instead, they encouraged the elf rank and file to make the first move. The elves attempted to possess some of Finn's new high-ranking people, only to discover that they were all protected by S-blockers. The elves retreated quickly, but even so, many of them were hunted down and killed for their presumption. The Uber-Espers observed from a distance and grew restless. They had been unable to fight in the Great Rebellion against the Empress Lionstone because they were forbidden by their creator, the Mater Mundi, and they were all helpless against her. She'd made them that way. But she was long gone now, and the Oversoul had left Logris. For the first time, the Uber-Espers made slow, tentative moves toward a union of purpose. Because as much as they hated each other, they hated Finn Durandal more. Finn kept himself busy. He made a call to the Sangreal Bar on his private channel, using the Paragon's comm implants. His 17 remaining possessed Paragons had been hiding out in the bar for some time now and were seriously bored. They were running out of things to do to each other. They were finally ready to listen. Finn knew better than to talk to them in person, but he could still be very convincing. He reminded the possessing elves that it was still in their best interests to go along with him for now, and offered them a chance to get out and play. A chance to kill a whole bunch of important people. They always liked that. He explained that he had set up extremely convincing proof that Parliament was riddled with traitors, seeking to undermine his best efforts to stop the terror for their own political advantage. He had already tested the waters of public opinion by killing the previously popular Mira Puri, and now he thought the public were ready for the next logical step.
Go to the House of Parliament. My security people already have it surrounded and infiltrated. They'll be waiting for you, and the way will be made clear. Go into the house, my paragons, and kill everyone there.
The paragons raced to the House of Parliament on their gravity sleds, keeping well above the streets. Finn had promised them a free hand against their old persecutors, and they meant to enjoy themselves. Their minds full of blood and slaughter, the possessed paragons came to Parliament, and the ring of security guards, all Finn's people and pre-warned, got out of their way in a hurry. The paragons swooped down like birds of prey, arrogant and strutting in their debased purple cloaks as they left their gravity sleds and strode into the house, heading straight for the main chamber with guns and swords in their hands. Nobody tried to stop them. Most just turned and ran. All the automatic defenses had been shut down.
How long are this can be allowed to... What is the meaning of this?
And the killing began. Energy beams flared, crisscrossing the house, blowing men and women apart in their seats. Some MPs tried to run, but the paragons were between them and the doors. Some tried to hide, but energy guns blew apart what cover there was. And a few MPs tried to fight, even though they were forbidden by long tradition from carrying weapons in the house. So they rushed the paragons, armed with nothing but courage and bare hands, and the elves drew their swords and went to meet them. Blood splashed the ancient furnishings and flowed across the floor of the house. The paragons took their time, hacking and cutting at their victims, instead of just running them through. The elves had decades of grudges to pay off, and they meant to savor every moment of their vengeance. Some MPs died bravely, some died begging and pleading, but in the end, they all died. The paragons piled up the corpses on the floor of the house and then spent a happy time doing nasty, distressing things to the bodies just to mark their territory. And then they marched out of the house, smearing MPs' blood on each other's faces as victory symbols. There was no media outside to record their triumph. Finn had declared the whole area off limits to the media, and when a few rogue cameras turned up anyway, Finn's people shot them out of the air. Finn was there, waiting to receive his paragons. He'd watched the killings on the monitors in Anne's office, but quickly grew bored. He smiled and nodded pleasantly to the paragons and told them to return to the Sangreal. They weren't too keen on that, but Finn promised there would soon be more bloody work for them. The thralls looked at him with other people's eyes and told him not to take too long. When the Paragons had all departed on their gravity sleds, Finn turned to his security guards and gestured at the House of Parliament.
Burn it down. Burn it all down. After all, we won't be needing it anymore, will we?